Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
Calling it an industry-wide conspiracy, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo this week announced his intention to file a lawsuit for the overprescription of opioids that he says has defrauded New Yorkers out of billions of dollars. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Cuomo says his Department of Financial Services is gathering evidence for a lawsuit that he says extends beyond the drug makers to the drug distributors and pharmacies for what the governor says is system-wide fraud that went on for decades and cost New York consumers an estimated $2 billion. He says the costs of the overuse of the opioids was passed on to insurance premium holders in the form of rate increases.
Which means health insurance companies were paying these prescriptions. They were then paying for the refill of the prescription. They were then paying for the emergency room when the person overdosed. They were then paying for the treatment facility when the person went into treatment. All those costs, those health insurance costs, get paid ultimately by whom? By you. That's who pays the cost.
The governor says major pharma companies like Purdue, which manufactured the popular opioid OxyContin, have gotten away with it for decades. He says it's cost thousands of human lives, 3,000 in New York alone last year who died from overdoses, and billions of dollars.
Give them one pill, they'll come back for more. How do you know? Because it's highly addictive, which they knew. And they were right. It was highly addictive. And you killed people.
Department of Financial Services Superintendent Linda Lacewell says her office is pursuing fines of up to $5,000 per fraudulent claim from the insurance companies that they regulate. She says her investigation is also focusing on the pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs. They are third-party administrators, or the middlemen, between opioid manufacturers and insurers. The PBMs set the formularies for prescription drug coverage provided by the insurance policies. They also negotiate rebates and credits paid by manufacturers and distributors. Lacewell says her department has received information that some PBMs may have been paid rebates. In exchange, they push the drug to patients by placing it on a list of drugs with lower copays. Lacewell says that could, in some cases, be a violation of federal and state health insurance regulations.
There are many manufacturers and distributors and PBMs that we have already subpoenaed, and we have also directed our insurance industry licensed participants to assist and cooperate, and we've sent them requests for information as well.
The Department of Financial Services will also hold statewide hearings. Lacewell could not give a date for the filing of the lawsuit, but she says they've already collected enough evidence through their investigatory work to pursue court action. New York Attorney General Tish James is also suing Purdue, as well as Johnson & Johnson and McKesson Corp., saying they created the opioid epidemic that has ravaged New York, causing widespread addiction, overdose deaths, and suffering, something the companies deny. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, let's talk about fusion voting for a moment, Alan. There was a public financing hearing this week, which was overshadowed by that controversy. The first hearing of the state commission to implement a public campaign finance system for New York's elections. And critics who came out were focusing in on this fusion voting. You also spoke this week with Karen Scharf, the co-chair of the Working Families Party, who says this is Governor Cuomo trying to end the party.
Well, she's right. The party endorsed Cuomo's opponent in the primary. He's not going to forget it. Not a guy who forgets easily. But almost all the other major politicians in New York State, many of whom are looking to be endorsed by the Working Families Party, don't want this to happen. A commission was appointed, and that commission was supposed to figure out a way to do public financing of elections. But instead of doing that alone, they're also doing what Karen Scharf calls a poison pill. And that is the ability to basically say no to cross-endorsements from third parties. It's a bad idea. It's worked well in New York State. It gives people a chance to say, okay, I'm for this candidate, even though I don't want to vote for him on a particular ticket. I don't know whether the governor will get away with it, but it seems to me to be a bad idea.
Then there's that whole issue of public financing of campaigns.
That's right. Look, in New York City, the biggest part of New York State, there is public financing of campaigns. Not only that, there are term limits on how long you can be there. So that has revolutionized the way New York City people are allowed to participate in politics and the way they do participate. Come on now, folks. If it's good enough for New York City and if it works well, how about the rest of the state? It's ridiculous not to have that happen. I think the governor knows it. I think he's on the right side on this one. I think we all know it. The insidious nature of money in politics is just too great, and it's got to be stopped, and we all know it intellectually. Now's the chance to do it.
Ms. Scharf from the Working Families Party also spoke about the progressive movement, their support of people like AOC and other state candidates who label themselves socialists, and that movement and their gains.
Well, look, David, the Democratic Party is in some cases moving left, but not in all cases. In fact, the takeover of the House of Representatives was by the sort of blue dog purple Democrats, not by the AOCs. Donald Trump would love to paint the Democratic Party as all socialist. He knows it's a winning a way of proceeding for him, and he will do it. He will try to do it. So it's a risky thing for Karen Scharf and for the Working Families Party to attach itself to because it plays right into the president's hands.
A coalition of county clerks, Alan, is lining up behind state lawmakers to oppose the plan to require New York drivers to pay a fee to update old license plates. This thing is really blown up in the governor's face.
It has, and you can look for him to get out from under it. He has been claiming all along, he's told me and he's told WAMC, that this was not his doing, it was the legislature's doing. And he says the legislature can change it. But you know what? When you need somebody to blame, you need somebody to blame. They're blaming him. He'll get out from under this. Believe me, he will.
There's also that common interpretation between lawmakers and the citizens of fees versus taxes.
Yeah, you know, they always say that a fee is not a tax, but of course it's money, it's green, it's gold, it's whatever, silver, and it comes out of somebody's paycheck or it comes out of somebody's bank account. So yes, you make a very good point, David. It is a tax to so many people.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Three members of Congress from New York are urging leaders of the Senate and House Armed Services Committees to prevent President Trump from redirecting funding for military projects to a wall at the southern border. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn with more.
A letter to the chair and ranking member of each Armed Services Committee is signed by U.S. Senators Kirsten Gillibrand and Charles Schumer and Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, all Democrats. They say the Pentagon's decision to divert $3.6 billion allocated for 127 military construction projects includes $160 million for projects at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point in Maloney's 18th district.
In our area, we're talking about the cemetery at West Point. You were literally talking about the final resting place for some of the greatest heroes in American military history. They are right now trying to expand and improve that hallowed ground. That is what is going to take a hit. So the president can go around Congress, go around the Constitution, and fund this vanity project of his. We're talking about the engineering center at West Point. We're talking about the water treatment plant at West Point. We're talking about the facilities that support these cadets that are the next generation of military leaders. That's the military's priority, by the way. You know how I know? Because that's what they wanted in the budget, not the wall.
Democratic Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, a West Point graduate, talks more about one of the cuts.
One of the cuts of the $160 million being cut from West Point is a cybersecurity and engineering research center. We all agree if we're going to position our military for the future threats and challenges we face, cybersecurity and engineering are at the top of that. That's just absolutely wrong.
In his September 3rd memo to Armed Forces Committee leaders, Defense Secretary Mark Esper says the Department of Defense will reprogram $3.6 billion in funds appropriated for military construction and maintenance to 11 military construction projects along the U.S. border with Mexico. Senator Schumer.
Taking money away from construction at West Point made no sense. It was a slap in the face of all of those who work hard at West Point and the whole military.
Esper says reprogramming the funding is in response to President Trump's February 15th proclamation of a national emergency at the southern border that requires the use of the armed forces. Schumer takes issue with what constitutes an emergency.
This was not the emergency that Congress intended when they passed this law. I think it's in the 70s. It was a true emergency, war, people at risk, etc. And you wouldn't want to go through Congress to rearrange money if you needed it immediately. So I believe there's a good chance it will be beaten in court. We are also trying to pass legislation in the upcoming budget, which would constrict the president's ability to put any of this money into the wall.
He believes there will be new court cases regarding those negatively impacted by the funding move. Maloney says funds for the West Point projects were already appropriated.
The trick is whether they've been obligated or whether they're in the pipeline. So the exact list is hard to know, but previously the Secretary of the Army and has listed these items that I'm mentioning. So don't take my word for it. The Secretary of the Army has said this is what's on the chopping block, and God knows what else, frankly, because you're talking about $3.6 billion. Last time I checked, the largest construction project in the Army is right here at West Point, number one. And so if you're looking for military construction dollars, that's where you're going to go. And that's why those projects I mentioned, the cemetery, the engineering center, the waste treatment plant over at West Point, are all going to pay the price for this move the president's pulling.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
A coalition of county clerks is lining up behind state lawmakers opposed to a plan to require New York drivers to pay to update old license plates. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
The political fight over license plates fees continues in New York State. On Wednesday, Republican State Senator James Tedisco organized a press conference with several county clerks to criticize a plan to require drivers to pay the state's $25 fee to replace license plates that are at least 10 years old and another $20 to keep their number. Tedisco of Glenville in Schenectady County characterized an online poll to pick a new license plate design as a stunt.
You just had a bogus, I have to call it a bogus, plan, poll on social media, pick the best plate. That's not the first question my constituents are asking. The first question that should be on there, do you want a multi-million dollar plate replacement program when you have some of the highest registration fees in the nation right now?
Tedisco calls the plan a highway heist. His office says replacement plates distributed with a $25 fee would raise $70 million over 2 years and estimates the plates would only cost taxpayers $2.3 million a year. Clerks from Columbia, Essex, Herkimer, Rensselaer, Saratoga, and Warren counties lined up behind Tedisco along with Republican State Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh of the 112th District. Frank Marola, the Rensselaer County clerk, says the plan is an unfair burden on taxpayers.
We hear it as clerks. We hear it every day at the window. People come up, they're frustrated, they're overtaxed and overburdened, and they're tired of it.
Marola said currently anyone who wants to replace a damaged plate can do so free of charge at their local DMV. The Republican-controlled Rensselaer County Legislature is also proposing a measure opposed to the fees. The state legislature passed a measure in 2009 that says a license plate fee cannot exceed $25. For his part, Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo says lawmakers have the power to lower the fee if they choose to come back for a special session. Here he is speaking last week on WAMC's Roundtable program.
The legislature comes back. They want to change the cost of a license plate. They can do that. They want to change the cost of a fishing license. They can do that. They want to change the tax code. They can do that. They set the fee 10 years ago. You want to reduce it? I'm all in favor of it. But don't say, the way you said, the governor set a $25 fee.
Tedisco argues a special session is not required and that the governor can reduce the fee on his own.
I say, governor, you have the power. Use that power. Not to charge $25. You say you want to reduce it. Don't bring us back. Use your power. Reduce it. Eliminate it.
The Republican senator said he will call his own legislative hearing with lawmakers from both sides opposed to the plan. Another reason for the change in plate design cited by the governor is that the current design, gold with blue text, would not function with a cashless tolling system, which the state is transitioning to.
We're going to electronic tolling, which means if it doesn't read your plate correctly, you don't pay the toll.
Saratoga County Clerk Craig Hayner said that's not true, that the state's license plate readers have no issue reading any plates.
There's people that travel through our state all the time from other states. The fact that they say that it's not readable really doesn't make any sense.
Tedisco, along with Assemblywoman Walsh, are in favor of the state suing 3M, the state's previous license plate vendor, for a faulty product. New York recently ended a four-year contract with 3M amid reports of the printed coating peeling off the plates. Here's Walsh.
I would love to see our Attorney General, Tish James, bring some type of a lawsuit to try to recoup some of the money from that loss. I don't think that should be, the replacement of these plates should be done on the backs of taxpayers.
State Department of Motor Vehicles Commissioner Mark Schroeder said in a statement that the administration has time to explore alternatives with the legislature before the plate replacement program goes into effect in April. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer was recently in Schenectady, standing with homeowners in the Stockade neighborhood to promote his flood insurance reform bill. Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there.
With the National Flood Insurance Program set to expire September 30th, Schumer said the bipartisan National Flood Insurance Program Reauthorization Act of 2019 would protect policyholders from rate hikes. The Democratic Senate Minority Leader was surprised to learn how high those rates are for Stockade homeowners who have dealt with regular flooding.
What our reforms do is as follows. One, it renews it for a minimum of 5 years instead of people worrying every year or every other year whether we would renew it. Second, we limit the increase that they can give any homeowner to 9%. So what would be the average flood insurance cost here? About $500, would you say? More.
This house pays $5,000.
In flood insurance?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes.
Is that true of most people paying that much here? No.
Yes.
Okay, well.
If you're in the FEMA floodplain.
Yeah, well, that's what you are. Okay, well, anyway, it will limit the increase dramatically, but we're going to have to we also re-examine the rates, and I'll bet it would affect Stockade in terms of how high flood insurance should be. I mean, on Long Island, which is more flood-prone than here, the South Shore of Long Island, they don't pay $5,000.
Schumer added, quote, sometimes these FEMA people can charge people whatever they think they can get away with. Stockade homeowner Mary D'Alessandro lives on Washington Avenue.
Every spring, there is a fear of flooding. We watch the ice jams, hold our breath, and hope that this time it will not happen. And now, in addition, we worry about storms due to climate change. When the flooding occurs, it is in the lower streets of the Stockade. Some are hit more than others. After Hurricane Irene and Tropical Storm Lee in 2011, the stockade was dramatically hit. The damage to this street and all the other low-lying streets were devastating.
Schumer added that a lapse of the flood insurance program would restrict the NFIP's authority to borrow money from the U.S. Treasury in the event of an emergency, crippling its ability to fulfill policy obligations should a major storm spur many insurance claims.
Our real opposition is from the administration, more than from Democrats or Republicans in the House and Senate. And so I think we have a good chance. We certainly have a good chance of renewing it, because if we didn't renew it, everything would come to a standstill and property values would plummet. But I think we have a pretty good chance of getting our bill done, which would deal with this issue. And it makes them redo the flood maps and recalibrate the flood maps. And now I understand why you're paying so much, because you were newly added in. And when they newly added in people, they made you pay the freight for a lot of people who had been there for a long time. And that our reform measure looks at that. So it could actually lower rates here.
Schumer's office notes the NFIP currently covers approximately 5 million policyholders nationwide. As of this June, there were 2,292 NFIP policies in force between Schenectady, Montgomery, Albany, and Rensselaer counties, and 2,250 contracts in force.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The Adirondack Council issues an annual report assessing the oversight by government agencies, localities, and others of the 6-million-acre Adirondack Park. This year's just-released State of the Park report, challenged by success, finds that the rising popularity of the region is also highlighting challenges. Council Executive Director Willie Janeway and spokesman John Sheehan spoke about the report with the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley. Janeway says the surge in the Adirondack's popularity caught many by surprise, and it's spotlighting the need to better manage the forest preserve.
People who know the Adirondacks have known it's an incredible national treasure, but it has caught people by surprise that in the last year or two, the popularity has soared. 12.4 million visitors, use doubling and tripling at some trailheads. Now, one of the great successes is the park is so popular, everybody says they support clean water, clean air, support the preservation of the East's greatest wilderness. But the state of the park we put out now is more important than ever because you really got to look at actions, not words. You've got to take out a microscope, talk to the scientists, and then you see that the Trump EPA is moving the wrong direction and that a number of the environmental protections in the Adirondacks are outdated or being undermined.
What's at risk more? Is it funding for the park? Is it the environment of the park? You know, when you go through seeing thumbs up, thumbs down, sometimes you can't necessarily analyze what exactly is at risk most.
So the ecological integrity, the clean water, the wild character of the park and the wildlife habitat is really threatened. It's threatened by climate change, and the Adirondack Council gives a big thumbs up to the legislature and Governor Cuomo for nation-leading climate legislation. Big thumbs up for clean water infrastructure money. But with regard to addressing the overuse, improving invasive species, making appointments to the Adirondack Park Agency, addressing misuse of ATVs, there's talk about addressing those issues and there's recognition that they are issues, but there's been a failure to take the comprehensive approach and to fund it, to provide more forest rangers and other staff. That funding and that policy support is desperately needed to ensure the Adirondacks survive for the next generation.
We have a democratically controlled legislature in Albany.
Right.
Many people have said upstate would be ignored because the power structure is concentrated in the city. As you worked up this report, did you see your thumbs up, thumbs down reflected in that?
We saw some of that. I think one of the more disappointing points of non-support this year actually came from the Adirondack Park Agency and the state Senate. We had agreement on a piece of legislation that would improve the way the Adirondack Park Agency deals with large subdivisions in very remote locations and would make a big improvement in the way that the agency is able to protect water quality and wildlife habitat. And we had the Adirondack Association of Towns and Villages supporting that piece of legislation, the Adirondack Common Ground Alliance, and every conservation group. But the Adirondack Park Agency actually lobbied against it, as did some other individual members of local government who were opposed to seeing it happen. And that meant that the Senate got confused and didn't do anything. And we thought that was gravely disappointing.
I noticed, particularly in your section on the governor, there are some thumbs up that, to me, not just impact the Adirondack Park, but could impact the entire state. Mm-hmm. Things like the single-use plastic bag, the implementation
and
of
the
that.
Food composting.
Yeah. The helping visitors understand what they see. That's very important for the Adirondacks, but I would think that that would be critical to any area of tourism. Are you kind of expanding out from a purely Adirondack focus on these things?
Well, go ahead, Willie.
We are staying focused on the Adirondacks, and we're the largest organization doing advocacy focused on the Adirondacks. But the things that impact the Adirondacks in today's age are not just local issues. They are state issues. They are global issues. So climate change, acid rain, invasive species, overuse, the way to address that isn't just an Adirondack solution or just a Catskill solution. It's looking at how we manage our parks across the state, including those two biggest parks. So we are increasingly working with allies on issues of overlap and coalitions to help the state take the right approach, not just to help the Adirondacks, but to help people around the state and beyond, people around the world.
An extended conversation with the Adirondack Council's Willie Janeway and John Sheehan, and a link to the 38th State of the Park report issued by the Adirondack Council are available at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1937. Or just listen our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.